Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith. Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. Joined, as always, by miniature Max Montana. You lost a bunch of weight. Lost like 25 pounds, right?
I was a kilo lighter this morning even.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't think I was.
I was thinking that after all that asada food yesterday, I would be a little heavier, but surprisingly not.
There's plenty more asada-based foods to come this week. And there's an entire another tray of enchiladas that Marissa had promised to me. So those will be getting made this week.
Enchiladas were delicious.
They are.
Marissa, you make fantastic enchiladas. Yes. Will she hear that? We don't know.
She listens to every episode.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they were wonderful, Marissa.
Listens to every episode, plus has attended by far the most clinics.
Oh, for sure. She has to.
At least 50 clinics. Says she always learns something new. She's probably lying, though. So today, we're going to be talking to you about exercise variation, the principle of variation, and then some of our personal favorites to include in our athletes programming, talking about what variations address different issues in the lifts for both powerlifting and weightlifting, and how you can improperly apply variation, and then how you can strategically apply variation and make it work for you. So before we get into that, thank you to our sponsor, Margaritas and Military Press. It's a lifestyle. Also, we have a ton of new apparel up at store.jtsstrength.com. And shirts like this, little gangsta SA bandana print in here.
Oh.
Bunch of different prints. Yeah, we don't have any blue bandana one, so I'm sorry to any of our listeners from the Crips. But, depends where you live. You might not want to buy this particular variation of the shirt. But, so make sure you go check out that stuff, all kind of new floral prints, bunch of new shirts. So go check those out. So, Max, what is variation?
Variation is the strategic manipulation of training variables to prevent staleness or injury and to augment the training process itself. Anything that we're doing in training, you know, any of the variables we have, exercise, you know, modality, sets and reps, intensities, those things are training variables. So any of those being modified or changed, primarily we're talking about exercises, I think.
Yeah, and that's what we'll talk about the most today is our different exercise selections, but you can introduce variation to training all the different ways that Max said. So actually using different exercises, loading them a different way, so different, you know, intensity schemes, different set rep schemes. That's all way to create new stimulus to drive adaptation in training. And the reason that variation is necessary is to prevent something called adaptive resistance. And adaptive resistance more or less means the longer we do the same thing, the less effective that thing is going to be. Max is the best example of this, having spent 13 years of his life
in adaptive resistance
doing the same. Well, not the first like 6 weeks were great.
The first 6 weeks were amazing. Then it's just an uphill battle.
So that's whatever it is. If you just have a 5 year long hypertrophy training cycle and you never potentiate that with strength training or changes to the loading strategy, and you're just living in that 8, 10, 12 reps, the gains are going to come a lot slower. If you're just doing singles all the time, gains are going to start to slow down. Same exercise endlessly, can slow down as well, but changing just the exercise within, you know, you could stay in the same set rep intensity realms, but just change the exercise. You could, be keeping the same exercise and manipulating the loading of it through changes in frequency, a lot of different things. But we're going to strategically use variation to avoid this idea of adaptive resistance. And where variation falls in importance is lower if you watched our series on scientific principles of strength training or read the book, the principle of variation is the fifth ranked principle out of seven. So is it valuable? Definitely. Is it important to use to have the most successful, most optimal training? Certainly. But being ranked fifth means that you can't violate overload, you know, specificity, overload, fatigue management, SRA, just for the sake of variation. I think that's a trap that a lot of people fall into.
West side.
Is they too highly prioritize variation in the greater scheme. And in an effort to really fight off adaptive resistance, they end up violating something that's more important called directed adaptation, which is basically, if I want to develop size, I need to train consistently for size for a while. If I want to develop skill in a particular lift, I need to train that particular lift for long enough to develop that skill. And then sort of the magic of, you know, great optimal programming is pushing the directed adaptation as long as you can before too much adaptive resistance comes up, and then making the switch of the exercise sort of right at that time as directed adaptation starts to tail off and adaptive resistance starts to trend up. That's when you make the switch.
Yeah. Something that's kind of an important caveat to that, the whole thing, is that what we're talking about a lot of times is optimal training, meaning getting the most out of what we put into something, getting the best results for the most for the work that's put in. So while it is certainly possible to make progress, probably continually for a very long time, with completely disregarding variation, having just the same exercise, same set and rep scheme for a very long time, or even the opposite side of that, having a tremendous amount of variety, at the excess amount, it's probably possible to make progress that way. But what we're talking about a lot of times is in optimizing your training. So the training itself is efficient. The sum of the parts is greater than the whole. And so while it's like, yeah, you can find example here and there of people that have had success far end of variation, the other end of variation, what we're talking about is how to optimize that and use that variable to the greatest degree to get the most out of your training, rather than just a program that works only because it, or works basically in spite of itself, if that makes sense.
So in today's episode, we're going to talk about, again, under application, over application, proper application of the principle of variation. I'm going to talk about some of my favorite variations for the squat, bench, and deadlift, and Max will address some of his favorite for the snatch, clean, and jerk. But before we get into all that, we're going to throw it to a Strength History Minute. Who's our guy today?
Strength History Minute today is Joe Doobie, 1969 world champion, and I believe the last male world champion and last male to set a world record in Olympic weightlifting. U.S. male.
Doob, take it away. Do you think he listens to this? We're friends on Facebook.
All right, yeah, I'm friends on Facebook.
Yeah.
I don't think I've met him once in person. But in passing, probably like a handshake.
He shared the video about himself, the Strength History Minute about himself.
Interesting.
So he pays attention.
Interesting. Do you think that when we cut, like in the Me, Myself, and Irene cut, where we could cut to the soft serve?
All right. Joe Doobie, take it away. Joe Doobie is an athlete I learned about from a conversation with John Broz at 2014 U.S. Weightlifting Nationals. Broz basically ruined my day and the idea that I'm good at squats when he told me about Joe Doobie squatting 770 for 17. It's since been confirmed by Joe Doobie's son that it was actually only 710 for 17, still a monstrous feat of squatting, particularly when you consider that this was done in the late 60s or early 70s. At most, the supportive gear was a weightlifting belt and ace bandage knee wraps. Doobie is the last American to win a world weightlifting championship, having brought home gold in the super heavyweight class in 1969. Doobie was also a bronze medalist in the 68 Mexico City Olympics. He also crossed over and was 7th place at 1979 World's Strongest Man. During Doobie's competitive days, weightlifting consisted of the snatch, clean and jerk, and clean and press. He was the first American to hit a 1,300-pound 3-lift total, setting 12 American and 4 world records. His best lifts of 210 kilos in the clean and press and 166 kilos in the snatch, plus his 710 for 17 squat, make him an all-time great strength athlete. And we are back. Hopefully you learned something about Joe Doobie, one of the strongest squatters ever, one of the best American weightlifters ever. So now we want to get more into the principle of variation. First, talking about how it can be misapplied from an under application of variation. All right. And we'll call this the ADA special. All right. And it's doing the same thing all the time. So an under application of the principle of variation, doing the same thing all the time, regardless of what it is, basically. Always high intensity, always high volume, always a given exercise variation. And I think people will latch on to the idea of specificity, or they'll look at what some incredibly successful lifters have done, whether it's, you know, Bulgarian training, whether it's Milanichev, Ilya Ilyin, these people are doing highly, highly specialized programs. Or specific programs, and think, well, they're the strongest in the world. That's what I want to do too, and that's all I'm going to do. You know, specificity is principle number one, so that's all I care about is most specific all the time, one rep max, competition exercise, just over and over and over again. And where you run into the problems, as we said, is this idea of adaptive resistance. The longer you do the same thing, the less benefit it's going to yield for you, as well as running into staleness. From a mental standpoint, I've had issues with this myself, where I do, you know, pretty optimal powerlifting training, which tends to be boring. And maybe it's not truly optimal if it's too boring and I can't stick with the program. But having times, particularly, you know, post-competition, times of much more general type of training to keep athletes more engaged mentally and you know, having fun with what they're doing, and an amazing thing to think that you might want to have fun with what you're doing. So those would all be examples of under application and really too much of the competition exercise, because, and there are different schools of thought on this, but if all I do is competition bench press, but I have weak triceps, how can I overload the specific musculature of the triceps to bring them up relative to the other muscle groups? And that can go for any of the lifts. The weak muscles will stay relatively weak. Now, it might all get stronger. The lift can still go up, but maybe not as fast as taking some time to use a strategic variation like, you know, close grip for the bench press, or, you know, front squat to, if you're lacking quad strength or something. But in the context of the ADA rule, under application of variation, recap for the people your illustrious history.
From day one of my initial start with my first coach in weightlifting until, let's say, day one, year one, to day, you know, whatever, year 13, 12, 13, the only variations I did were classic snatch, classic clean and jerk, power snatch, power clean and jerk, and front squat. Towards the, I guess the later half was back squat, but all for single repetitions, the occasional variation of a set of like three or five or whatever, but never actually programmed and never enough to actually elicit much adaptation.
And it would be like one random.
It'd be like out of nowhere on a Tuesday, you do a big front squat, like, hey, let's see how many times I can do 400 pounds, you know, and you do it for five or something. And so
you weren't even doing like back down.
We would do back down sets, but it'd be singles.
Oh, back down singles.
We'd work up to like a top single in the squat, and then our back down sets would be like, do two more singles, 10 kilos lighter.
And how did Uncle Ivan tell you for the day?
5 kilo more.
Yeah.
Five kilo more.
Front squat, do maximum.
The maximum. Oh, yeah. The maximum.
That's every day.
Every day. So, every day, two or three times a day. And really just one slice of the pie, of the variation pie that we use. Total specificity for, you know, all singles, all maximum intensity, only the competitive exercises and the closest variations.
So also, we call that the pinky and the brain program.
Yeah, what are we going to try to do
tonight? The same thing we do every night, pinky. Try to take over the world.
Yeah. Try to maximum every day. Try to maximum. And so that was the bulk of my training, really.
And I think people have a misconception, and it's not a bad thing to think. It's probably better from an actual training standpoint, but this is certainly not something that Objev would have prescribed. There was not relative maximums. There was not max for the day.
No.
It was...
it was absolute.
Yeah.
To the heaviest possible intensity. I remember one time asking him, well, on Sundays, you would just have a light session, meaning you really didn't train. You just went to the gym and did something. And we're asking one of the lifters, what are we supposed to do? He said, oh, just warm up. I said, well, how heavy is that? He said, well, what's your best front squat? And I said, well, it's like 230 right now. And he asked Abajayev, and he spoke in Bulgarian, 2 minutes of speaking and then a one-word answer was anything up to 220. That's a warm-up. So anything up to almost maximum, anything up to maximum is a warm-up. And so we just worked up, and that was it. Really, really easy, because you have all these adaptations specific, that are for exactly what you're doing. There's just no foundation to build on above that. So you're able to do maximum weights, super heavy intensities, singles, what you've trained very, very well, but pushing beyond that result and building a new functional level beyond that was essentially not possible. Or was just extraordinarily slow and very, very unproductive on top of a precarious foundation of possible injury here and there. So that was my experience didn't even know variation.
And physical injury is one thing. What about
emotional?
Yeah. What about when your soul gets hurt?
it just crushes you. That's the first thing that happens in the idea of overtraining. I guess the terminology is, there's a lot of discussion, I think, as to what the terminology of overtraining really means. But what's really important is that the idea of becoming stale and becoming unmotivated is you have to be a highly motivated person. You have to be highly motivated to do these things, to become perfect in technique, to become very strong, to train hard. So when your training results in something that basically makes you not want to do it on such a level that you find ways to avoid doing it, you've killed your motivation. And so, it's very, very difficult to start pushing into new boundaries and breaking into new boundaries and kind of reaching new levels. You're sort of stuck in this place where when you have any motivation, it's quickly sapped or quickly lost because the exercise and the training itself is so monotonous and so just uncomfortable to do mentally and psychologically that, you get very little out of it.
Well, I remember you telling me a story. Maybe you were 6 weeks into training with Abajayev, and it was around Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I my best front squat at the time, probably going in, was about 230 kilos. I probably weighed about 88 kilos. And I went into the gym on Thanksgiving, was a Thursday, and it was a Thursday that year. on Monday, I went in and I could front squat, 220 or something like that. Went to Tuesday, got crushed with, 200, 205. Wednesday, couldn't even front squat 70 kilos. So I walk up to the bar, took out the rack, squat down, and just nothing. Just not just a lack of physical strength, but a complete, if someone had been like, you can die at the bottom of this squat, or you can dump it and go and do something else, but dying is the easiest option, I would have been like, yeah, I'll just take death. Just kill me. Just kill me now at the bottom and I'll be fine. Couldn't stand up. I couldn't stand up with 70. I could barely stand up with anything.
And this too, so you were about 6 weeks into training with Abajayev, right? And after like 2 or 3 days, you'd made some huge clean and jerk or huge.
So first day I went there, I think my best power snatch was like 110. I watched Nikolai Hristov snatch 185 kilos, which was better than my clean and jerk. Within like 2 weeks, I power snatched 130.
And that's when Abajayev said that
you'll be Olympic champion. Yes. He's Olympic champion. Then this day, after I get crushed and molested by the bar of 100 with 70 kilos, and it was probably more like 2 or 3 days.
Show me on the doll where the bar hurt you.
There was an Olympic bar sized hole in my heart when I couldn't stand with 70, and it was probably more than one day. I was just broken. Couldn't go anywhere. We took Thursday off for Thanksgiving.
Well, what did Abajayev call you?
Oh yeah, I'm jumping ahead. So I miss 70. Just can't do anything. I'm just sitting there, just destroyed. And this is like, imagine like six weeks of just hammering. Like you're king shit. Every day in the gym, the Bulgarians are telling me, like, you're going to fucking die. You got to stop. Slow down, slow down. Like, I don't understand what you mean. Like, this is America. You just work super hard and you get to the top. 6 weeks in, you hit this brick wall. Abhijeev is like, this guy is great. He's awesome. And Martin, you know, my good friend, he's like, you got to stop. You're not, this is like, this is not how the system works.
He's trying to teach you about the Krushka.
He's trying to teach me about Krushka. So I'm there, broken. First rep, I missed 70 kilos in the front squat. Abhijeev looks at me, and that's it. It's fucking over. It's like, yeah, this guy is just fucking lazy as shit, like everybody else. He missed the rep. He just quit. He gave up. He can't squat. He doesn't want to train hard. 6 weeks of just bleeding and grinding and fighting and crushing. One missed rep at a lightweight, and suddenly you're just a huge vagina. Like, just get the fuck out of here. And he says to me, I want to say someone was like, didn't you say he's supposed to be, he could be Olympic champion? And he says to them, to everybody, he says, he's Olympic champion of no training. No training. So I went from like a 10 to like a negative 1, back down to shit. I remember asking him too. They had a term. The term was like teshek, which means roughly like you have one testicle. Like you're kind of like this, I guess that's like this, you know, insult. So I asked him, I was like, well, what do I have to do to redeem myself? And he's like, well, you'd have to, you know, as a 94, you'd have to clean and jerk, you know, a big weight. And I said, well, as a 94, how much do I have to clean and jerk to not be, you know, to be like not garbage in your eyes? Should you not? He sat there for about 5 seconds, 245. I was like, 245? Are you serious? I was like, do you mean like 245, like no doping control? And he's like, I don't care if you eat shit, 245. So he had standards that were like impossible up here. And then when you didn't even come close halfway, you're garbage. So there's no leeway in there. But that was the system too, right? Yeah. There's nothing but only here at the top, and everything else is worthless.
But then you had Thanksgiving.
Then Thanksgiving, we took Thanksgiving off. And on Friday I came in, I think our front squat had a PR. So, you know, clearly it worked. We should do it all the time. No. And that wasn't related to like any increase in recovery, I don't think. I think all that was related to the psychological benefit of, for one, not being surrounded by, you know, basically the Adolf Hitler of training. And you get a day off and you rest, and then you come in mentally so refreshed. You know, imagine if you've been in prison for 6 weeks or 6 years, that first day out, you're probably going to feel incredible, even though physiologically nothing's different, right? So I think that's a huge part to say that, because physically I didn't really get hurt doing it. I didn't like have my knees blow up, my back blow up. I was physically able to do what I could. I mean, I couldn't stand with 70, but that was much more psychological. And to show like how significant variation can be if it's underutilized, the psychological aspect is probably the first thing to go. Granted, that probably could have been mitigated much earlier on had we had some variety or had some kind of, you know, variation in the training stimulus over and over. But yeah, I think that goes very much to show that the psychological side of it is definitely the first thing to degrade. So
those are all examples of the under application of variation. How are some people over applying it?
Well, I think the biggest problems with over application, the overuse of variation, are certainly going to be in people that are going way outside the boundaries of specific exercises. They're missing the boat because they have so much variety in training. There's no directed adaptation. If you have 15 different bench variations, you've got 70 different squat variations, there's just no way that 70 different variations are really having an impact that they could.
I think when you get into that with too much variation or too frequent of change, and such a big exercise pool, it's not only a variation of specificity, but also a violation of specificity. It's also a violation of overload, because there's no way to track improvement and track changes in exercise. Because if you're trying to say like, okay, well, the last time I did this exercise was 4 months ago, and now I produced this result on it, it's like there's so many variables in between those times. It's like, did only your technique improve at the exercise? Like, did you actually acquire any more skill or strength at it?
I think, yeah. You know, one thing that I think is kind of interesting, this is just my personal observation, is that especially with variation, variation is one of these things that kind of holds on to this urban legend of the idea that, you know, on one extreme, if you don't change up your routine, bro, then you're going to, you know, not make any progress.
Muscle confusion
versus the, well, you know, snatching from the blocks is a trick lift. That doesn't really count. They're both on the extreme, but generally I would say the bigger violator there is having this idea that you have to have really constant high frequency changing of exercises or changing of the routine in order to sort of stave off staleness. Because in my own example, that didn't even exist, and there was still progress over the course of some time. I think if you had somebody in the opposite side where there's constant change, it would be probably even less progress. That'd be my observation. I can't back that up with any kind of science, but...
Well, particularly if specificity is principle number one.
Right, and you're violating that.
Then. Yeah, and you're violating that for a lower ranked principle that... You know,
right.
I'd rather, if forced to choose, only specificity is better than only variation.
Right.
Luckily, we're not forced to choose.
Yeah.
So...
The other thing too is that the really high variation, the constant change in high frequency, is people are directing too much energy to things they don't need to, right? They're gonna you can put too much energy into small exercises or like sort of assistance things, bodybuilding type movements for weightlifter, things that will eat up your ability to recover just because of the energy expenditure there and the fatigue, and then not produce the results you want.
Yeah, I mean that's another inherent violation of specificity, you know, doing more volume of accessory exercises than primary exercise. That not only is going to violate specificity by making the program as a whole less specific, because of course accessory exercises are less specific than primary exercises, but it's also probably going to violate overload, the number two ranked principle, because accessory exercises can't be loaded as intensely. You know, you can't
dumbbell bench your way to a 500 pound bench press.
Yeah. Like that stuff has to be, it's the icing on the cake and the toppings, you know, you can't just have a giant pile of icing with no cake underneath it.
Well,
some have tried.
If it fits your macros, just eat whatever you want.
Those are some of the examples of over application of variation. So it's too frequent. There's too many variations that inherently at some point are going to become nonspecific. So looking at how we can most properly apply it is all going to be strategy and timing. So there are different phases of training, you know, the way that we structure training, general hypertrophy training, strength, and peaking, that some variations are more appropriate. And again, variation is not just different exercises, it's also different loading strategies. So of course, hypertrophy training, the creating variation in how many reps you're doing per set, even though it might be less specific, and it is less specific to do 10 reps than it is to do one rep, it can be appropriate for that phase. You can choose exercise variations as well during different phases that are more appropriate. So during hypertrophy, exercise variations that lend themselves to greater, to be able to perform greater volume. High bar squats, front squats, leg press, hack squat, unilateral work, all squat examples, but those all lend themselves to more volume being done and being able to effectively recover and fit all your other training in than low bar, you know, competition squatting or squatting and low bar squatting and reps is going to. So those would all be proper application of it based on the phase that you're in. Even for weightlifting, if you're in the general phase and you're pushing general exercise like the squat harder, it may become appropriate and strategic at that point to do more lifts from blocks.
Right.
Or more, you know, no hook, no feet, stuff that allows you to retain technique without adding more and more fatigue on top of that.
Right. I think the one thing too, in variation, it's we're talking about the proper application is what are the adaptations where a training is directed at. So if we're, you know, variation in the sense that in your hypertrophy phase, you know, if you're doing near maximum or maximum single, you know, repetitions in the deadlift or the back squat or something, that's a variation of, while it may be specific, the exercise itself is specific to your sport, it's not, the adaptations you're going to get from that are not directed towards hypertrophy as much as something like, you know, sets of 10 or rep maxes and things. So it's important to understand that within the phase, it's important that your exercise variation does not violate specificity, right?
Yeah. So yeah, to sort of sum up proper application of variation, it's about strategic timing, further away from competition, more variation. And that's variation in terms of exercise technique being used. So like what exercise you're actually doing and how that exercise is being loaded. And then beyond that, we want to strategically select our variations that you use at any phase, whether that's, you know, during hypertrophy training, selecting variations that allow for greater volume, whether that's as you progress into strength and peaking, selecting variations that are more specific to competition or allow for greater overload, maybe even a mechanical overload at times, something like slingshot or reverse band could be appropriate as you get closer to competition. And then, of course, strategically selecting variations that address your weaknesses, because if you have super strong triceps and weak pecs and you want to just keep pushing the close grip benching without, you know, doing anything like a wide grip bench to bring up the pec strength, you know, that would be a failure of strategic variation there. And then, you know, using variation again, like right after competition, to do much more general training to keep the athlete engaged mentally, to avoid the mental staleness and the psychological effect that can come with just constantly doing the same thing over and over endlessly in training.
The technical side of it too, right? Learning and mastering the movement, developing the skill. You know, no variation can prevent the lifter from having a sense as to how the exercise is performed if they have a slight variation in the movement. You know, different variations of the lift may have a small change that allows you to sort of feel what you need to do to actually improve the technique of the lift. Without any variation, you are going to probably continually execute the lift with the same mistake and ingrain it more and more and more. So the technical side can also be, you know, improvements in the technical side of lifting can also be benefited very much from the proper application of variation.
All right, so we're going to take another quick break. We're going to have a little minute to get to know Max Montana over here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about our favorite variations to develop squat, bench, deadlift, snatch, clean, and jerk.
My dad kept the video rental business going. My brother worked for him. My brother's older than me. I worked for him. Neither of my sisters worked for him. But you know, he had adult video section in the video store, and there's some strange shit that goes on. People renting movies, like you get people renting like adult films and Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen movies at the same time. Like you just. It was weird. There was some cool times. I mean, he had the video store until 2012 before he sold it to some lady who I guess thought it was a good idea to buy a video store in 2012. You know, we worked for him. My brother worked for him. I got excited by the idea of like working for yourself, watching my dad do that, like watching my dad kind of, you know, run his own business, and he worked for himself. He did what he wanted, you know, and kind of was in charge of his own life. And I think that inspired me a lot when I was older to sort of get out of working. I really hated working for people. Like I didn't enjoy it. I didn't like the whole, you know, 9 to 5, show up and get a paycheck thing. And that, you know, that obviously led me into owning a gym later, you know, from
weightlifting and from the idea of like kind of owning my own gym or owning my own business and working for myself. I was kind of a natural progression, I think, to that. But, you know, I didn't go to school. I didn't go to college. I went for 3 weeks because I had to beat my dad, who went for 2 weeks. And so I felt like after 3 weeks and after having beat him, that was sufficient. So I'm kind of a competitive person. So I always feel like it was important to one up somebody.
All right, so we've talked about what variation is. We've talked about how to properly apply it, how it can be misapplied, either over or under application. Now let's get into some practical examples of what our favorite exercise variations are to develop these different lifts. And again, there's so much context that would really have to go into this for us to be able to tell you, the viewer, what your best exercise variation is. So in this, we'll try and give, you know, some context around why this is our favorite variation or why it's a good variation. And if you can try and understand the principles and the reasoning behind that, you may be able to say, well, even though they think this exercise is great, the reasons they gave don't really apply to me, but I could see how, you know, where I'm lacking in things could be useful for some other variation. So make sure you keep that in mind as we're going through these. For the squat, yeah, probably the exercise variation that I prescribed to the most people that seems to be really beneficial is the belt squat. And we've talked at length before about differences in lifters who have strong legs and a weak back, or strong back and weak legs. And the belt squat is going to be great for the latter group there, the strong back and weak legs, because it's going to put all the stress on the quads and absence of loading for the back. It can be trained for really high volumes. As you're training it, you want to make sure, you know, maybe even overemphasizing the weight towards the front of the foot, so all the stress is going into the quads, because that's the point of the movement, is developing the quads. So, you know, don't sit back into a belt squat. And if you're using a belt and loading pin, it would be really challenging to do that. But certainly with some of the machines, when you have like a handle in front of you, it could lend itself to really sitting back. And you know, that could be a useful exercise just for a different purpose. If you really need to develop hip strength or something and you had very strong quads, then maybe the sitting back belt squat could be useful. But you know, I think over the last 4 years, I've probably done like 150 seminars and seen maybe 4,500 different lifters.
Because 1,000 lifters.
and the weak quad seems to be more problematic.
I always find that's funny, and not to mock people, but a lot of times people come up to me and and they'll be like, I'm so quad dominant, and you look down at their legs and you're like, well, your knee is the thickest part of your leg. I don't really understand how that's possible. I think it's just one of those old, you know, quad dominant.
They saw it in a lot of T-Nation articles.
Sitting is a new cancer.
Sitting is the new smoking.
Sorry, sitting is a new smoking.
So the belt squat is great, particularly if you do fall in that category. Strong back, weaker legs. We have a whole video about assessing that and finding the differences there. A couple other favorite squat ones. You know, safety squat bar is really the one specialty bar that I tend to advocate for the use of. Not only can it be great if, you know, your arms get beat up from low bar squatting as a good alternative there, but it's also going to put a lot of stress on the quads and build up the upper back. I fucking hate that thing.
It's really uncomfortable.
I used to be good at it, but my last go rounds with the safety squat bar,
I remember, yeah, that was like a huge drop off. Like, yes. Chad's basically 1,000-pound squatter. I remember he's doing like 500 pounds.
It was crushing.
Really uncomfortable. Yeah, looking.
It was like 20%,
which is really odd because I would have thought you'd be amazing at that.
I know.
I was always really strong at it, but
I used to be strong at it. But the safety squat bar, because it'll build up the upper back really well.
Yeah.
You know, beyond that, for squat variations, just pauses at different places. Remember, when you're doing pause in the squat, bench, or deadlift, you want to put the pause right before your sticking point, because the sticking point is not the weak point. The bar has to slow down to stop, so you want to get stronger where it's slowing down. So if you stick, you know, 3 inches above parallel in the squat, try doing pauses at, you know, an inch and a half or 2 inches above parallel and building up strength in that range of motion. In the bench, I think, you know, tons of great bench variations out there. One that I've, that Marissa and Kristen have both been doing a lot in this last train cycle and been really successful with is a feet up Spoto press. Mm-hmm. And that's basically as a muscle intensive lift as possible. And for female lifters, I think it's so concerned with how big can I make my arch? You know, how much can I exploit a shortened range of motion and stuff? The focus needs to shift from that. You know, technique is great and the setup and the position are great, but that's only going to get you so much. If you ain't got any muscle, like what are you going to lift the weights with? And feet up Spoto press takes away, you know, any ability to get a big arch in the setup. It takes away any ability for leg drive. So if you got no leverage from the setup and you got no leg drive,
yeah,
it's like then you have to use your muscles to lift it. You know,
if you're wondering on a tutorial how to do a feet up Spoto press, go to any high school weight room and ask the weightlifting or gym coach, the PE teacher, how to bench press.
Yeah.
It's a great variation, though.
Yeah. And, you know, the feet up stuff we had to do with Marissa because she was having some piriformis SI issues after Worlds. So we'd been pushing the feet up pressing a lot and then just went with the Spoto on top of that. And it just, it really makes the muscles work because there is no other way to lift the weight. And that's going to be, you know, a great exercise for hypertrophy. It's not going to be something that you're maxing out on. You're doing one or two or three rep maxes on because it's just not a variation that would be strategic for, you know, big overload, but it is great for a lot of volume. It's great to put a lot of stress on those muscles of the bench press. Other bench variations that we really like, you know, close grip is going to be great for almost everyone to build the lockout. Be mindful, especially if you have very long arms, of what position your shoulder may get into when the bar comes all the way to your chest. If your shoulder's kind of popping forward and you're losing that scapular retraction and control, you know, doing a close grip to a one board or a two board may be appropriate for you there. And then I think wide grip pressing variations, as long as your shoulders can stay healthy with that, that's going to be probably most effective to build up the pec strength. And the bench press at its core is a pec exercise. A pec exercise, then a shoulder, and then a tricep exercise. It's definitely not a back exercise. And you know how I know that is I went to 24 Hour Fitness and they had the little diagrams. And the pecs were shaded in the darkest.
They're, yeah, red, yeah.
Yeah, and those were made by scientists. Well,
it would be false advertising, so it would be illegal for them to put it on there.
Yeah, and those are made by scientists. So you know that the – but yeah, the pecs – those are going to drive big bench presses. So wide grip is great for that. But make your muscles work. Feet up Spoto press. Feet up all different kind of variations at the right time. Farther away from the meat. And then as you get closer and closer, you get more specific, more specific. You have to put more weight on the bar. And then, you know, getting your right setup and your technique down is paramount. Of course, technical prowess and peaking. And then finally for the deadlift, the box deadlift, far and away, box deadlift vert pull is been the number one thing to improve my deadlift, clients deadlifts. We have a big tutorial about this that I'll try and remember to link somewhere in this video, but is it just an RDL? Yes and no. I've done a ton of RDLs and I've done a ton of box deadlifts, and the box deadlifts were usually with 50 to 100 pounds less than the RDLs, but I felt them way
yeah,
more.
Yeah. The strictness of the box deadlift yeah. is significant because an RDL, I mean, when you think about if your knee shifts forward and, you know, from weightlifting, seeing that if your knee shifts forward a tiny bit, yeah. the pressure of
even
the,
an almost imperceptible
yeah.
amount.
Yeah. Just a shift in body weight in the foot, it suddenly changes the exercise, you know, the RDL, the box RDL is superior in that it makes the exercise way more strict and I think probably localizes the pressure a lot more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it allows you to get more out of the exercise with less weight,
yep.
and that's going to be a great thing because it is a variation. It is a little bit less specific. You don't need to add needless fatigue
right.
through
right.
you know, going heavier and heavier, thinking that you're doing RDLs and you're really just doing deadlifts, more deadlifts
yeah.
at that point.
Yeah, which is probably one of the most ineffective exercises, like deadlifts from the top down,
yeah,
touch and go.
So what about for the snatch? What are your...
For weightlifting for the snatch, the number one variation for me is going to be like no hook, no feet. So without a hook grip, without the movement of the feet. Biggest reason for this is that it's really, really similar to the snatch, which is a very technical movement, but it forces a condition that makes it harder to have errors in the trajectory of the bar. So if you can't move your feet and you can't use a hook grip, the lack of the moving feet forces you to have to pull and keep the bar over the area of base. You can't be 3 inches forward because you're not going to move your feet to get under it. I think your brain can sense this and adjust for things. The lack of a hook grip prevents you from making contact in the hip that's so aggressive and so horizontal that the bar pops out and moves forward, again, preventing you from jumping forward or leaving the bar out in front of you. Having a hook grip on the bar allows you to make more aggressive contact because you can overcome the inertia of actually connecting with the bar. Without a hook grip, your brain, again, can sense this, and you have to basically sort of mute that extension or mute that force, that horizontal force into the bar, and translate it to be a much more vertical movement. The other variations I think that are really good are going to be something like a snatch with a pause at the knee, because it does a great job of reinforcing the position at the knee, which is kind of the most critical position in terms of getting the bar into the right place before the second pull, or hang snatches, because they do the same thing as pause snatches but allow you to load your back a little bit more, and then block snatches would be the last in that line, because block snatches are similar to those, but you can still kind of finagle your way around the position and get into a really good position that might not be something you can mimic from the ground.
And to that effect, you know, using the blocks or hang, are you of the idea of like teaching the technique from the top down?
Yeah, so the reason I teach the technique from the top down is that most of the population we're working with is going to come in after puberty, and they're going to be stiff or tight or have some different limitations. So most people are going to need to work at the very top position, the snatch, the overhead squat, having the shoulders overhead. Starting there and then working your way down just makes the progression more sensible. Starting from the ground, when people have a hard time moving the bar properly off the ground, is really tough. You know, you're basically working upstream in that sense, I feel like. So, you know, from the top down is just generally, I think it's better. I think the second pull is such a critical movement, such a critical thing to learn, that you have to start there.
And a lot of the first pull is really just getting you in the best position for the second pull, right?
Yeah. If you know how to make the second pull really good, the first pull is just a matter of lining yourself up for that. For the clean, I would say the biggest variation there is going to be from blocks. And just like in the snatch from blocks or whatever, from the hang, if there's a potential to overload the exercise to actually exceed your best result from the floor from blocks, I think there's a big benefit to that for weightlifters, because unlike in powerlifting where you might be able to actually do, you know, a half squat or a little bit higher squat with more weight, or do block pulls in the deadlift with more weight, you have a little bit of a sense to kind of overload. You can overload the exercise a little bit more mechanically. From the blocks, the confidence, the psychological aspect of succeeding with heavier weights from the blocks in the clean is a very, very positive impact on people. It also does a good job of increasing the rate of force development. You have so much less time to accelerate the bar from the blocks. It's going to force you to be a little bit more explosive. And generally in the clean, the best cleaners in the world, if you watch them, people like Ilya Illin, the second pull, the explosion in their clean is very short and very, very powerful. They don't spend any extra time extending longer than they need to, and this allows them to get in the bar much faster and with more weight. The other variations for the clean would be similar to the snatch, probably like a clean with a pause at the knee to reinforce that. Snatch or cleans from the hang, again, similar reinforcement, a little more work for the back. And then really in the clean, a lot of it is just going to be the strength of the body. So the much more general exercises, increasing your back squat and your deadlift, and then increasing the strength of your low back and your legs in general. For the jerk, the number one exercise for us is going to be behind the neck jerk. Again, for a similar reason, is that we can overload this. It does two really nice things. One, the bar starts in a little bit better place, so it's easier to get the bar back behind your head where it belongs, so your trajectory is going to improve. So you practice from behind the neck, you're more of those reps are going to be in the right place more often. That is going to transfer to being more skillful and having much better trajectory from the front. The other side of the coin there is that you can also overload it. Some people can do more from behind the neck in the jerk, and again, it's a really good psychological benefit to have done, you know, these movements are ballistic. So it's a do or die thing, right? You either make it or you don't. Having success with weight that's more than what you're actually attempting, you know, I think that gives you a little psychological cushion, right?
I think it definitely takes a certain type of courage to put yourself under,
right?
Yeah, you know,
right.
A big ass weight. So.
Yeah. And then the other variations would be like a push press. Big thing with the push press is that your trajectory has to improve. You can't push press the weight 2 inches in front of your face. You're just not able to do it. Teaches the dip and drive, gives you more chance to practice the dip and drive and the push press, and then the added benefit of improving trajectory and strengthening the upper body. In a lot of cases, lifters don't do a lot of push presses because they're sort of resistant to the idea of building their upper bodies up too much. But in my experience, for most people, that's actually not an issue, especially women. I've never seen women where they increased their push press a lot and had really negative impacts on the actual jerk. Some men, you know, some people who have really big upper bodies, you know, and pump would probably be a little bit less beneficial just because he's so, you know, jacked up top that it can cause problems. But in general, push press is a good exercise. And then any other kind of drills for footwork and hand position, press from the split, jump into split, those things are great for jerks because it teaches you the footwork and it just reinforces those basic aspects of the lift.
So those are some of our favorite variations. Again, they're not the only variations. They're not even necessarily the best variations. There's variations we've seen to work in these circumstances. So assess for yourself what your situation is, you know, why these variations could be good for you or why you maybe need to find some different ones. But that's a little bit, you know, overview of exercise variation, you know, how much is too much, how much is too little, and, you know, trying to find that sweet spot of just the right amount of strategically used variation. So kind of wrapping up, if you enjoy the Jug Life podcast, we would love for you to go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us a review like our man Ron the Lifter. This is a bit of a long review, but you can do it. Warning, listening to this podcast will result in a lengthy list of action and sports movies from the 70s and 80s. I think Ron's maybe even too young to know. Most of these are from the 80s or 90s.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But we're not that old that you need to watch or rewatch. Now that you've been warned, the Jug Life podcast is hosted by the Nitro Cold Brew Guzzling Chad Wesley Smith and Max Montana Ada, whose bromance is greater than that of Dylan and Dutch's handshake. If you didn't get that, if you didn't get that reference, I don't know if this is the right podcast for you. This podcast comprises of about 30% movie quotes, 50% great info on periodization, nutrition, and training for weightlifting and powerlifting, and 20% jabs at Westside and Mark Ripito.
I don't think we've jabbed at Mark Ripito. Oh, maybe yeah. 5 times total.
That's good. That 50% on training, though, is full of quality content ensured by a consistent panel of notable guests. If you're a weightlifter or powerlifter looking to train smarter and harder, this podcast is highly recommended. This podcast is also sponsored by an ever-changing list of questionable lifestyles. So thank you, Ron, for that great review. We should probably maybe start giving these people who we read the reviews something. So, Ron, if you're listening, you can email me, chad@jtsstrength, and I'll send you a shirt or something.
Ooh.
Upcoming events. So, to reiterate, if you like the podcast, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny.
You might get something.
Yeah, we'll read it, and maybe I'll send something.
Yeah, maybe. You'll have to wait and find out. Yeah. You have to write a great review.
That is step one. Upcoming events. October 28th, I will be in Minneapolis doing a presentation on programming, program design for lifters of all levels, beginner, intermediate, advanced, male, female, big and small, and everything in between. So come check that out at the Movement Minneapolis. You can sign up for that at store.jtsstrength.com. On Wednesday, November 1st, and I'm going to announce this even though it's not 100% confirmed that we're doing it, but we will be in Park City for a little team training camp there in Park City in Salt Lake City. And we're going to do the Jug Life live-ish.
Live audio, live studio audience.
Yeah, filmed in front of a live studio audience. Assuming that some of you show up, or we'll just be there by ourselves doing it as normal. And that will be at the Boneyard Saloon in Park City, like right off of the main drag there in Park City, where Team Juggernaut weightlifter Kaylin Pepito is a waitress. And if you don't want to come hang out with us, well, you know,
the food's great.
Probably.
Hopefully.
Kaylin will be there. Q will be there.
Yeah. A lot of strong lifters are there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chris
Pomp will be there.
Pomp, yeah.
He's very muscly. And
you can meet Rocco.
Yeah.
Pomp's mini Pomp.
Yes. He's only, how old is Rocco now? 5 months?
5 months, man.
He's huge.
Pomp always sends me pictures of him.
He's like the hugest, muscliest baby.
And he'll
ever.
Be like, look how ripped he is.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's funny. Then you look and you're like, I just have abs.
Yeah, he's pretty jacked, baby. So that is Wednesday, November 1st. We'll give more details about that as the time approaches. But you can come, and it's basically, when I say a live episode, we'll do our little spiel and then we'll take questions from the audience and just kind of hang out and drink beers. And you see Max get wasted. He might hurt himself again, who knows.
That's very possible. Can we get one of those like laugh tracks, applause
need... oh yeah,
applause-o-meter,
maybe. I could see Alyssa being like our Flavor Flav sort of and working the crowd for us.
That would be cool.
Yeah, she'll be out of control. Then November 11th, Max will be doing a weightlifting clinic.
Yep.
At Bay State Barbell, and we think that that's in
Massachusetts.
Yeah, good.
Maybe Boston. That's not a good one. That was a bad Boston accent.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah. But
it's going to be...
Edit that out.
It's going to be fucking wicked cool seminar.
There you go.
Yeah. It's going to be a wicked retarded awesome seminar about snatching, cleaning, Jack. Then from November 11th through the 19th, Marissa and I will be in Ireland doing seminars all over. Dublin, Limerick, Belfast, some other places. To be honest, I don't even know everywhere we're going. I'm just going to kind of show up and our host is sort of going to take me from place to place.
There's a town called Limerick?
Yeah.
There's got to be Limericks about it. Like a man from Nantucket, so on.
Yeah, so if you want more info on that, I think I'm doing like 4 seminars and a couple of small group personal training sessions out there. We'll be in Ireland November 11th through the 19th. So send me an email about that, chat@jtsstrength.com. Beyond that, check out our online coaching, juggernautcoaching.com. Powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, all different levels. People are killing it, making very, very big progress in all the lifts, and just kind of a great community of people who are supporting each other. Great coaches, myself, Max, Pomp, Marissa, Kristen Dunsmore, Andy Huang, that huge Asian guy, you may know him as, can be your coaches. So yeah, again, juggernautcoaching.com. And then subscribe to the YouTube, you know, share the podcast with your friends who want to get better at lifting things. And yeah, that's it. Where can they find you, Max?
Find me on Instagram, max_Ada, or on Facebook. You can email me, max@jtsstrength. If you have any questions about the Juggernaut online coaching. And he already said the website, so I can't screw it up.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith, and @JuggernautTrain on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your newsfeed all day. Thanks for listening, watching, however you're interacting with us, and we'll see you next week.